But just before we get started, I would like to say a big thank you to Naylor Agility for sponsoring this podcast. They are a UK equipment provider for agility equipment. They specifically produce tunnels, tunnel bags, agility jumps and stacking blocks, as well as wobble boards. So Naylor Agility have been a huge support in me starting this podcast, and they provide fantastic high quality equipment. I cannot recommend them enough. So thank you, Naylor, again for supporting the Agility Rose Talk and Train podcast. And without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hi, Holly. Thank you
for
joining me. I'm really excited about this podcast because this is something I absolutely love talking about. And I know when I've done one of your seminars before, I could have listened to you all day long about this subject. So so just to get into it, could you introduce yourself, your dogs, and how long you've been in the world of dogs for?
Yes. So hello, I'm Holly Barker. I'm a canine nutritionist and I have six dogs. They are five border collies and a lurcher. Go from youngest to oldest. So you've got Frankie and Alita. They're the same age, litter sisters. I haven't had them as litter mates. Frankie joined me earlier this year as a return to breeder. But technically, I didn't breed her, but I ended up with her anyway. But never mind, because she's don't mind at all. So Frankie and Alita are the youngest. Next one is Wallace. He's a failed sheepdog. He's a total pain in the bum. He's really derpy. he's not, you know, you expect a certain standard of intelligence when you have border collies, don't you? And Wallace just doesn't quite meet it. Bless him. He tries really hard, but he will absolutely not do anything at all that you want him to do unless he can physically see the cheese in your hand. And even then it's limited to things like sitting and lying down. Bless him. So that's Wallace. Next one is Flynn. Flynn is Alita and Frankie's dad. I kind of want to say he is a failed sheepdog, but not because he can't. It's just because he just likes enjoying life too much to have a job. He's a fine to work sheep. He's absolutely fine. He works sheep. He's really good in the pens. He's really good at lambing time, moving single sheep, which is a skill in itself. So he does have skill set, and he is a useful dog. But but the last time I took him to a sheepdog clinic to kind of do you know, some of the more advanced stuff and kind of progress him from a kind of handy dog to have in pens and lambing time, he realised that there was more, and that the more was hard. It was difficult. Like that he was going to have to do some learning. And while I was trying to teach him to just give a bit more distance and try to learn how to split sheep, and he just kept looking at me like, "You're taking this very seriously, mother, and I don't like that. I like having nice times, and I feel like you're putting too much expectation on me." And he just looked at me, and then at the exact moment that I was like, "Oh, you just want to play, and I don't know how to make this more fun for you." And I was trying to figure out how to make it more fun for him. And as I was thinking that, someone walked onto the field to watch with a puppy. Done. Wasn't it? At all. He just looked at me, looked at the puppy, and he was like, "That is way more fun. You're going to go and play with a puppy," and literally ran from one end of the field to the other, abandoned me, abandoned his sheep, buggered off up the other end of the field and went and played with this puppy in front of a multi-world champion sheepdog handler who I really respect and you know, wanted to make a good impression on. And he just caught my eye, and I was like, "So Flynn's a failed sheepdog as of today." Because they've got to want to work, haven't they? And he was just like, I don't want to do any of this serious stuff. I just want to have fun and do things that involve like being within touching distance of me. So that's Flynn. Where do I get up to? Who's oldest next? Wren.
Wren, beautiful Wren.
Beautiful Wren, light of my life. We don't have favourites. she's just lush, isn't she? Wren's done a little bit of everything. Wren just loves She loves doing things with me. She loves anything that involves training for reward or praise or being a brain box. She's played a little bit of agility. She's played a bit of fly ball. She's done a bit of hoopers. She finds it all extremely exciting. She likes working sheep, but she's like the opposite of Flynn. She doesn't like the finer, close at hand stuff where she has to concentrate. She likes moving big mobs of sheep. She likes to bully animals en masse. She's a little bit of an ass, but just magnificent in it. So she would gather a hill all day. She's very head up. She likes looking for a sheep. She likes the challenge of finding them and moving them long distances. And she likes the accolade of being able to influence the movement of so many animals through such fine movements. Like she'll watch them and see what happens with just the slightest turn of a head, the slightest flick of an ear.
Wow.
The way she sets a tail, and she just drinks it all in. And she was like, this is how I manipulate the sheepies. She loves it. And then the oldest is Arthur, and he's a lurcher. He's a pointer crossed with a setter, crossed with a GSD and a Malinois and a great collie. Oh, bless him. He's a little bit deaf. He's a little bit nibbly. Like, if he's worried about something, the way that he seeks reassurance is to just gently hold your hand in his mouth, which has gotten him into so much trouble. He had 5 foster homes before me, and I was like, we need to get this dog DNA tested, because everyone's been treating him like a collie, and he's just not. I didn't know what he was at the time, but he just wasn't collie. So that's all of the creatures.
Oh, bless him. Such a beautiful gang as well. They're absolutely
beautiful gorgeous. I love them lots. We're not dog sports. I recently found out that I have ADHD, which makes a lot of sense. So while I admire the dog sports and I want to do them all, and I've tried my hand at many, it turns out the reason why I can't stick at any is just because that's the way I'm wired. I can't actually stick at anything at all.
Oh, wow. Do you know, it's really funny you say that, because actually I'm going for a diagnosis myself.
I think it's I always feel a little bit like when I mention it, like, oh yeah, another one.
Because
I just think, you know, if you're a female between the ages of 30 and 50, it seems like we've all got ADHD. So maybe ADHD isn't what we thought it was. Maybe it's a response to a parenting style or world events, who knows.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? There's not as much research out there for us ladies. So.
Definitely not. The way mine manifests is I get really interested in dog sports and then I don't do any of them. The only thing I've continued to do fairly consistently has been the sheep work, and that's because it's seasonal and I can pick it up and you know, it's by myself. No one else has to rely on me. I don't have to go very far to do it.
Yeah.
So dog sport stuff, it's just been ongoing since forever. Since I don't know.
There's too much choice, that's the problem.
Too much choice. And before that it was horses, and before that swimming, and before that was gymnastics, and before, I dabble.
Dabble, that's the best way to put it. We dabble in everything. Awesome. So I've got lots of questions sent in. I asked on Instagram for people to send their questions in, and we've got some really good ones. So just to start off with, question one, where did your passion for dog nutrition come from, and what experiences brought you to where you are now? So I had a bit of this background when I did one of your seminars, and I was mesmerized. So take the floor if you could.
Well, I was saying on... I did another podcast recently, and my reply to a similar question is that in the past, every time I've been asked that question, I've always given a different answer. That either means that I don't know, or that it's too vast for me to understand. So when things are vast and I can't say this is the moment and this is why, then that means it's a vocation, doesn't it? It means it's been a lifelong journey to get to the point where you're at now. So that's what it's been. I think if I wanted to identify the driver for all of that, is that I'm allowed to swear.
By all means, I can put an explicit on this if don't.
I fucking love dogs.
Yeah.
I do. I just really, really love them. And my love language is food. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really, really like in life is science. I've always enjoyed a little bit of science. And so with food being my love language and dogs being my passion, feeding them just became Brian delivering me a cup of tea.
Oh, he's very helpful, bless him.
He's very helpful. So that's the sum of it. Some of it is mm-hmm. I love dogs. Food is my love language. Science is my thing. And I combined all of those things and started doing canine nutrition. The reason why I wanted to focus on canine athletes is because no one else was.
Mm.
And I had a major issue with imposter syndrome. And my way of kind of avoiding that was, if I'm doing something that no one else is doing, then I'll have to do it because I'll have no one to compare myself to.
Yes. Yep. I know that feeling.
Yeah. So that's what I did. And I was like, I know, without being, I don't want to come across as arrogant or boastful, but I've always really enjoyed science, particularly biology. And I mean, mm-hmm. from small, really small, like before I understood that the things that I had an interest in were science, I was always collecting animals and raising them and nurturing them and caring for them from, you know, being injured or sick. I was really like quite naughty for it. So we lived in the countryside and I was forever in trouble for seizing animals from their natural environment and healing them when, you know, everyone else, you know, sort of my family and stuff like that, were like, just let nature take its course. Like, no, I need to have a bat living in my pocket for 3 weeks until it's strong enough to fly and I can release it back into the wild and things like that. So aww. Dogs with a natural progression. And from the nutritional perspective, it's such a good science-y topic. Mm. Because it involves biochemistry and biology and physiology and function and farming. You know, if you really want to get into the nitty gritty of foods, then that starts with farming, and all my family are farmers. So food production is interesting to me as well. So all of it, the whole shebang, I really enjoy. And every time one area of it starts to wear thin, becomes too trendy, becomes too popular, becomes too steeped in myth, then I can just move on to something else and just tackle little areas at a time to hopefully make things better for sporting dogs. And sporting dogs, because, you know, why not? There's nutritionists for sporting horses and sporting people.
Yeah.
And dogs work hard for us. So I wanted to make their food life better for everything that they do in order to achieve the things that we would like them to.
Oh, and do you know what? From being in your nutrition group on Facebook, but completely for free for people to join, the amount of advice and the amount of help you've given on there, completely free of charge as well at times, you can just see how much it means to people who you've helped, and the dogs as well, because obviously I've known you for quite some time, and yeah. I know just how much you care for all the dogs. You
were at that seminar when someone told me their dog died and I cried in front of everyone, didn't I?
Bless you. Yeah,
you were there, weren't you? And I had to compose myself. I was like, just give me a minute, because I'd known that dog for like, they were one of my first ever paying clients, you know.
Aww.
And I just felt really attached. I was like, I can't believe you're telling me this in the middle of the seminar. Yeah, I had a blubber tonight. I'm always bloody crying about people's dogs, you know.
And it's not helpful when you know so many people with dogs either, is it?
Sometimes I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's a reflex. It just, yeah, there are times when I just, you know, I just switch off of the social media.
Mm.
Because sometimes it feels like everyone in dog world is there. They're on there. And, you know, you can't... Sometimes keeping dogs is one of the most painful experiences of your life.
Oh, God, yeah.
And we talk about it so openly and almost sort of constantly. Mm. And when you see that through social media, it can be quite a lot.
Yeah.
Taking on everyone's emotions. Yeah, it's tough. I do care.
and that comes across tenfold, honestly. Amazing. So, question two, if you're ready.
Yes.
If there is one thing you wish more people would change or implement with their agility dog's diet, what would it be and why?
It would be hydration.
Yes.
The why is so that you can compete your dog with a lower risk. Mm-hmm. Climate change is massive. And if you haven't noticed that the summers in this country are getting unbearable, then the summers are getting bad, not just for the heat, but the humidity. We live in such a wet country for most of the time. The short periods where we do get decent heat, it's evaporating all of that moisture from the ground and from the plants and everything else. Mm-hmm. And it's really humid, and heat injury in dogs, it's a big thing. As I've already explained, I do sheep work with my dogs, and sort of country living, farming living, living with the seasons has been something that I've done since very small. And you know, sheep have to be sheared. You get up at 5 in the morning to beat the heat, but also your good working dogs, your dogs that can put in work when it's hot, they're clever. They will seek water, and I defy anyone that's got a good number of collies that knows them well, that gets out and about with them into the countryside. We will all have met one of those collies that's a water seeker.
Yeah.
And you let them off lead and it's screw you, I'm going to find a body of water as quickly as possible. They're really good at it. It's something that we've bred into them to do because it's important.
Wow.
You need that. You need that in a dog. You need a water seeker to survive. And what they do is, I think people imagine moving sheep as the dog just constantly working. But, you know, when you're moving across ground, especially quite a lot of ground, you know, your dog doesn't need to be doing it all the time, especially if you've got a quad bike there as well. Yeah. They can hop on the bike and have a rest, or they can bugger off to the next field over, or they can have 5 minutes to go and find some water. And the really good dogs will do that. They'll find a water trough, they'll chuck their whole selves in it, and while they're lying in it cooling down, they'll drink and drink and drink. It's really important to have a dog like that because they're the ones that don't die in heat. So whether you're breeding for it intentionally or not, it still does come through the lines because, you know, what you'll do is you'll breed from a dog that did exceptionally well in hard conditions. And they're the sort of dogs that you get. So, some dogs really good at hydration by themselves. Most of them not. Trying to get a dog to drink, bloody pain in the arse.
Oh, God,
and you know that they need to drink more and they won't do it anyway. And then you go into these situations where, you know, it's a bit warm, it's a bit humid, the grass is a bit long, you feel the heat on the ground. You're heading towards midday, you're running your dog, and you know your dog's going to be all right because it's like 2 minutes. It's 2 minutes. And you know that afterwards you're probably going to be able to get them to drink. But you wish that you would have had them drink something beforehand, because we know that if you increase the hydration before the exercise, then you decrease the risk. So we know all that. And that's what I wish people would get better at, because the risk from heat injury is really, really, really very real. The risk from them getting bloat from having a good amount of fluid, you know, half an hour before they do the run, not so much. They're only running for 2 minutes and it's not like a hugely stressful event. You're not giving them loads of fluid, you just need to give them a bit. So, hydration. Hydration would be the thing that I would pick. And my reasoning for that is because if your dogs are going to want to be performing in summer, then that's what we're going to have to do, because we could, you know, it's progress, isn't it? It's a way to progress. And I know a lot of people, I see it through the summer of, you know, people saying that they didn't do a run or they, you know, it was too hot and all the rest of it. And that's fine. You've got to put your dog first. But a well-hydrated dog should be able to cope. And I think people should stop being quite so judgy about what dogs are doing in the heat, because we're going to have to adapt, and nothing's going to get better if people are just sat there judging and going, you ran your dog and it was 32 degrees. Like, but what was that dog's internal temperature before and after? How much fluid had it had? How fit is this dog?
And I think I always think as well in that circumstance, you know, dogs live in hot countries. I mean, obviously our dogs maybe aren't quite as used to it, but, you know, like you say, it's something that's becoming more common with obviously climate change and everything. So, you know, we're going to get those hotter summers. So like you said, setting them up with the hydration is going to give them a much better chance of being happy and healthy as well.
Yeah, and it's really well studied for running for dogs that actually run, you know, huskies and stuff like that. That's greyhounds. The you know, those are the sports where there's more research. And I'll probably, my group's turned off at the minute. I was just having a little rest. It got quite intense this week. I don't know if you noticed. So I just have a little rest, but I'll put it back on. And when I put it back on, I'm going to talk about hydration, because you can bait water with anything. It's called baited water.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be like 100% clear fluid. You can chuck a tin of sardines in a 3-litre bottle of water and shake it up.
Oh, I've never that one. Ooh.
Looks gross. Looks like sick, especially if you use it. It smells a bit like sick as well, but so what? It's going to get that fluid in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think people traditionally think of, you know, hydration as just being water, or maybe water with some electrolytes in or whatever. It doesn't. It just has to be, you know, high in moisture, really high in moisture. And that's all it needs to be. So for hydration, you can use yogurts, you can use cottage cheese, you can use vegetable soup, you can use, thank goodness for the pooch hooch bone broths.
Yes.
What a bloody long time coming that has been.
Yeah.
Not from them. They're great. I mean, the rest of the world, because the rest of the world, up until Pooch Hooch, all you could get was chicken, lamb or beef. The lamb was about £12 500ml. It was bloody ridiculous. You know I don't like chicken anyway.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, we'll get on to that one.
Yeah, me on my little soapbox. But thank goodness for them.
Yes. It's such good prices, like you say. They're really affordable.
That'll get your dog drinking.
Yes.
And yeah, they're just really bone broth in general, but any hydration, that's the thing I've picked. Do you think people accept that, or do you think they might want me to sell food as well?
No, I think that's perfect. I think that's really good, and it was sort of the next question as well, actually, so it links really nicely, actually. So I'll cut this bit, don't worry. But question three was, what advice would you give for someone wanting to ensure their dog stays better hydrated at shows, especially when it gets hot in summer, which is perfect. You've already answered it for us.
Oh, well, there we go, two in one. But yeah, baited water.
Yeah.
You can do all sorts. I put milk in water, yogurt in water.
Goat's milk.
Goat's milk, absolutely. But I mean, you can go really quiet. Some dogs really do have a sweet tooth, you know.
Mm.
So things like honey or, you know, mashed banana, whatever it is that your dog's like, you can put it in water and shake it up and make it nice. Cream cheese will work. Really gross, really gross. I know that there are dogs out there they'd sell their soul for Primula. They would.
Yes.
Primula is there. You know what? If you have to whack half a tube of Primula in a 2-litre bottle of water and shake it up, I know it looks like vomit, but your dog will drink it.
Yeah.
And it's salty enough. It's got electrolytes in there. And I think it's probably got maltodextrin in it as well. So gross. Not the healthiest thing, but it'll hydrate your dog if you
shake
it in a water bottle. Ugh, gross, though. Throw that bottle away.
That's not coming clean. I do like you specified in a water bottle, because otherwise, if I was trying to mix that in a bowl, I think it would.
Don't mix it in a bowl. No.
No, water bottles for the win. well, amazing. So, next question, if that's okay. We've got so many, they're brilliant. What are the best foods or supplements you can add to a dog's diet to support their joint health?
Joint health?
Oh. Yes, joint health. I know you can talk all day on this one.
I can. I won't. So, we'll go from the top. We'll start with omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
So, omega-3s, and I'll talk about my chicken obsession as well.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, we'll start with omega-3s. So, to look after joint health and bodily health in general, omega-3s are really important. And the omega-3 to 6 ratio within the body needs to be so that the omega-3 is higher than the omega-6.
Okay, yep.
If it's not, it causes inflammation. So this is bad for joints, bad for gut health, bad for everything.
Yeah.
One of the foods that is most high in omega-6 is chicken. So when I'm working with canine athletes, where I want everything to a T, spit spot, magic, no room for error, marginal gains, all of the things that you do when you're taking care of an area of an athlete's health,
yep,
then I try and make everything as perfect as possible. And one of the easier ways to do that is I remove chicken and I remove salmon. And that is because mm-hmm. both of them, in their raw form, dirty, and I'm not putting my canine athlete's immune system at risk. I'm not giving them something that they have to overcome. Everyone says, oh, why'd you ban those? Because, you know, a dog's immune system can cope with the level of bacteria that find in raw chicken or raw salmon. And my point is, why should they have to?
Yeah.
They're an elite athlete. I'm not going to risk a contamination if I don't have to. So we take them out for that reason. And the main reason, though, is because I want my omega 3 to 6 ratio perfect. Because I want their kidneys perfect and I want their muscles perfect and I want their joints perfect. So that's why. Then I go about creating the height, the therapeutic level of omega 3. And to do that, I can do it in two ways. I can feed them a fish oil that is not salmon, that is, you know, wild caught herring, you know, bluefish, oily fish, so herring, mackerel, anchovy. You can get those sort of oils. There's Nordic oils, there's Healthy Hounds omega 3 oil, all of those really quite good. They're clean, they're Nordic, they're from clean waters, they're checked for their metal levels, and they are cold pressed and purified.
Amazing.
Great. And then my other favorite thing, which everybody knows by now, is Antinol, which is green lipped mussel oil. So it's an essential oil, basically, but from green lipped mussels. So you can buy the powders, you can buy the other green lipped mussel products if you wish. But nothing's as effective as the extracted lipids from that, which is the oil. And I get that by using Antinol. I'll share my codes if that's okay, because everyone makes a bargain. Thank you. So if you use the code Holly Sent Me, and my name is spelled Holly. So if you use Holly Sent Me, all one words, capitals, that gets you an extra 5% off of the 35% that you get for a starter pack.
Oh, amazing. That's
So that's 40% off. So that's And it doesn't matter how big your dog is. If when you get a starter pack, you say that your dog is massive, then you get more for your money.
Love that.
Cheating, just a little bit cheating. And then for subsequent, purchases, if you use the code Holly's Gang, no apostrophe, just Holly's, and then the word gang, all one word, then you get 5% off every purchase after that. Which is a good deal.
Like I say, especially when, you know, maybe you have multiple dogs as well. You know, every little penny counts, doesn't it?
And then other ways I like to save money is by using supplements that are designed for horses, but perfectly dog safe.
Yes.
Partly because I have lots of dogs, and partly because I am northern and tight-fisted. And this is... This is a northern podcast, we know, so
yes, definitely, we're an
money saving all the way. So my next favorite thing is rose hips, and up until fairly recently, my use of that was fairly anecdotal, and the belief was it was a very high dose of vitamin C that helps with the joints, helps with the synthesis of things like hyaluronic acid and why do I always forget what it's called? Collagen. There we go, collagen. And all of that. But actually, it's not just the vitamin C. It contains fatty acids called galactolipids. And they're really important for the lubrication of the joint. So before that was a known fact, I was using it anyway. And now that is a known fact. I'm even more keen on using it. So... rose hips, I use the Dodson and Horrell ones for horses, but you can buy any rose hip granules or powder. It's all pretty much the same thing. And it is half a teaspoon per 5 kilogram body weight of dog.
Amazing.
Thyme, another good one. Natural anti-inflammatory, helps with stiff muscles, helps with stiff joints. It's generally a nice herb to have in the diet anyway, as well as pro anti-inflammatory. It helps with digestion. it's naturally antimicrobial, so I like to have that one in there. You feed the same amount as you would the rose hips, so it's easy to remember how much to give.
Awesome.
Supplements. There are loads out there. It's a nightmare trying to find which one is the best, and there are new ones coming out all the time. So along with sorting out the omega-3s, either with a decent fish oil or with Antinol, the rose hip, the next thing I'd be looking at would be a supplement that is glucosamine, chondroitin, hyaluronic acid, and MSM, which is methyl sulfate something or other. Do you know what it is? I know what it is, but every time I try and say it, I fail. I'm not going to do it. So we're going to stick with the fact that it's called MSM. Yeah. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for something with all of those things in one. And there are lots of popular ones, particularly in the agility community. There are lots of ones that, you know, boast extremely high strengths. I don't know if that's particularly necessary. We don't really know how much dogs can uptake. We know that their digestion is shorter and quicker than ours. And the best human supplements aren't kind of hitting those, you know, thousands and thousands of milligrams of active ingredient per serving. I don't know if that's necessarily as important as it's reported to be. So as long as you get a supplement with those things in that I just mentioned, it doesn't really matter which one you choose. A dog that's over sort of I would say over sort of 12 kilograms, it's going to be on the human dose of a human supplement anyway. It works out the same because they've got a faster metabolism than we have. If you're going to use a human supplement for joint care, make sure that there is no vitamin D3 in it. Dogs are very, very easily overdosed with human supplements that contain vitamin D3. So when I'm saying you can use anything, you can, but D3 is something to check. The same with when I'm saying about using horse supplements. Check that there's nothing else in there. In particular, you can't use the Rheaflex joint thing instead of the dog one. I know it's cheaper, it works out cheaper, but I can't remember which part of it. I think it's the it might be the phosphorus. No, it's not. Manganese. The manganese is way and above what a dog should have. Way above. So don't do that. So there are things that you should check, and there are caveats to that. But for the most part, as long as it's got glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, hyaluronic acid, and collagen, if you can get one with collagen in it as well, then you're well away. But again, your bone broths are a good source of collagen.
Brilliant. That's amazing. And like I said, there's quite a few examples there, but also knowing the ingredients to go away and be able to kind of self sort of assess as well for some people will be really helpful as well.
Oh, actually, I suppose people want to know when to start them as well. So my when to start, that's what I get a commission from Antinol, and that's what, way back when I started working for them, that was what that commission was to pay for, was for me to go out from them and find out when the best time to start joint support for a canine athlete should be. And actually it turned out quite simple. So it should be when your dog is doing everything that you want it to be doing. So when it has matured to the point of running full courses, doing full contacts, and doing all of the things that prior to that you were protecting the dog from. Because ultimately, when we're protecting the dog's joints as a youngster, so we're not doing full contacts, we're not doing full heights, we're not doing full courses up until that point, because we're protecting that dog, so once that's done, the top and bottom of it is, people aren't going to like that I'm saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway, the top and bottom of it is the risk of injury at that point increases. Whether it's a bruised socket, as soon as those stabilizers are off, then your risk of injury increases dramatically. And if you're going to increase the risk of injury, then what you need to do is increase the risk. Increase the safety blanket of things to help recover from an injury. And that's what all of that does as well, the Atenolol and everything. I imagine that people will be wondering about Boswellia, which is another anti-inflammatory joint supporting ingredient that, that I use. I use that more specifically, sort of clinically. So if I have a dog that's got an injury, I don't use it in the protective fashion that I do the other things. The other things that I've mentioned, they're joint care to promote healthy joints. Boswellia, it's if there's inflammation there already and you know it is. So a dog that's got arthritis, hip dysplasia, anything like that. If you know there's an inflammatory process ongoing, that's when you add in the Boswellia. And the same for something that has, let's say, devil's claw in it. Devil's claw is a bit like natural Metacam. You know, that's for an injury. It's not
strong stuff.
It's not for giving every day. It's not for part of a regime, unless it's, you know, a dog that has arthritis and some preparations like Maxiflax, for example, that has a little bit of devil's claw in it.
Yeah,
not enough to be considered a therapeutic level, just enough to increase comfort. You know, it's a bit of stiffness at the end of the day. I mean, you do a run with your dog and you can feel it the next day.
Yeah. Oh, I need some of it when I come out of the gym, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I could have it by the bucket load.
Yeah. Some preparations have got like a tiny bit in there just for kind of a post-workout comfort. But apart from that, that's what I think about joint care.
Amazing. You know, my brain's already ticking like, I need to get this, I need to get that.
If there's one thing that I feel some guilt for, it's that I underestimated how much agility people are persuaded to buy things.
Oh, yeah. Well, no offense to the sheep.
And that I should have tempered that down, like when I say, because I'm passionate, so when I say that something's really good and I really like believe in something, everyone goes out and buys it, and I'm like, no, that wasn't like, you don't feel obliged, it's expensive. I'm just saying that, like, you know, if it's okay, then you could buy it, but don't feel pressured. And agility people are just like, did you suggest to me to buy something? I'll buy 10 of them.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I don't need any convincing that my shopping habits.
No, at all. And then everyone's like, I can't believe it's taken you so long to, like, you know, be an affiliate and partner with a group. And I'm like, because you have to have integrity.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, to believe that, I'm not just saying for the sake of it that something's good. Like, I waited years and years and years before, before it even came into this country. And before that, I felt like some kind of black market smuggler trying to get people who were in Australia to send it me via eBay and stuff. Can you get the Atenolol? And now it's in this country and I'm excited.
And do you know what? I think that confirms just how good, you know, in terms of the advice you give, you want to make sure that it's exactly right for the dogs, and because you care so much about it. And I think that just reflects completely. And I like the fact that you tried to get it from Australia. Oh, my goodness.
I did from, what was she called? Gabriel Joy, I think it was her. The lady that feeds the dingoes. I was like, can you get Atenolol?
Oh, amazing. Awesome. So that definitely answers that question. So we'll move on to the next one, which is something that I struggled with as well, one of my dogs. So lots of people were asking this, and it was, have you got any advice for keeping weight on dogs, particularly entire males? That's the headache of its own. And one in particular, one person asked, their dog is raw fed, but he can't tolerate oats.
That's fine. I know that people are like, Holly's gonna say oats, and I'm sick of her hearing her saying oats. I am sick of myself saying oats as well. I'm really sorry. Yeah, it just doesn't have to be. I know carbs have been demonized, specifically grains have been demonized in the wave of raw feeding, and young male dogs, I'm sorry, but some of them need a carb. Have you ever seen young male human beings restrictive of carbs? Angry little.
Yeah.
And I would be if someone took my carbs off me. So it does help. You know, there's all of, basically it comes down to calories in, calories out. And young male dogs, you can put as many calories in as you like, and what happens with them is, because of their hormones, and because usually they're quite bum sucky, aren't they, young male dogs, they just want to please you. They just want to be the best boy and do everything and do it at 100 miles an hour whether you want them to or not. So the thing is you can put loads of calories into them and they'll just use it creating nonsense. You know, walking backwards and forwards, wiggling like just being a derp, and you're like, yes, but you're burning calories, can you keep still? So yeah, lots of ways to do that. It doesn't just have to be oats, particularly for raw fed dogs. I do still feel that there is a benefit for weight gain by adding some carbs, and that is because one of the reasons why carbs are demonized is because so many dogs are bloody fat. We're very isolated in our sporting dog world with our skinny dogs. The rest of the world has fat dogs, unbelievably fat dogs. Even the dogs that people think aren't fat, they are fat. You know, so many of them just worlds away from, you know, the pet dog obesity pandemic that they're suffering with. And one of the reasons why they're suffering is because they're stuffed full of carbs all the time, and they're not using them for anything purposeful. So you can use that to your advantage in a skinny dog. You can use carbs to help gain weight. So you can use, my favorite one is sticking a load of sweet potatoes in the oven or the air fryer and baking them till they're kind of caramelized and really sweet, because sweetness basically means that you've increased the glycemic index. But in a healthy way, because sweet potatoes are good, aren't they? I mean, it's not a good idea, but really stodgy carbs, things like, you know, that aren't good, things like white pasta. I mean, I'm not saying feed that your dog. I'm just saying that things like that, things that are high glycemic index, will put weight on your dog like nobody's business. Not particularly good for the pancreas, though, whereas sweet potato is. So I would use sweet potato. I would say, I know I said I wouldn't say oats, but sometimes with the oats, I usually say cold soak them. And I wish I'd never said it, because firstly, because I don't do it because I never remember. And secondly, because I found that actually quite a lot of dogs do better with the oats when they're just made like normal porridge, when they've been broken down a bit. Sometimes I think in the cold soaked form, they're just not getting digested and they irritate the gut on the way down and they sort of come out as a big nasty splat and they're not well digested. Sometimes using like the ready breck type oats, finer oats, cook them so it's a bit smoother consistency, so it's got that kind of stretchy mucilaginous texture, that can be a little bit more protective for the gut. So it might be that your dog can't tolerate oats, it might just be that your dog can't tolerate it the way that I've said to do it, so maybe some scope for twiddling. Other things that are good, things that are good for calories, your oils. So olive oil, my skinny dog, I mean, he's six now, so it's not an adolescent phase. It's just because he just turns food into energy. He's not turning food into fat at any point at all. He's not storing anything. He just moves constantly. But the one thing that does keep fat on my skinny one a little bit of a covering is olive oil. And honestly, I just kind of pour it on like gravy at this point. I don't even measure it. Eggs are really good. Just cracking a raw egg into feed. You know, you're going to increase, by adding a couple of eggs, you're going to increase the calories by, you know, around about 100. I think it is about 100 calories for an egg. Might be making that up. Don't Google it and make me look stupid, but you can get some extra calories from an egg. So eggs, olive oils, choosing things that are higher calorie. So, you know, lamb tripe in a raw fed dog. Lamb tripe, no good. Very little fat in a lamb tripe. Beef tripe, however, quite a lot of fat. So you can increase the calories that way. Eggs increase calories. Oily fish like sardines increase calories. So look at what you're choosing. Look at the brands as well. I don't want to slag off any particular brands, but if you take the lid off your dog food and it's one that contains veg and it's supposed to have tripe in it or fish or whatever, and you sniff it and it smells more like vegetables than it does like meat, you're probably not going to be getting anywhere in terms of getting weight on your dog, because meat should smell meaty. It should not smell like vegetables. Unfortunately, for the ones that do have veg in it, there's a bit of a trick that these companies have stumbled across, or maybe engineered on purpose. If you mix beetroot with either carrots or with butternut squash, the beetroot mixed with the orange vegetable looks like meat when it's all minced together. Oh, it was the same color as meat. So you get these brands with veg in, and you smell it. It smells very veggy, but looks like meat. It's got the meaty colored runoff.
Mm.
But these dogs can't get weight on, and usually it's just because it's too heavy on the veg.
Oh, interesting.
Too heavy on veg and too heavy on carcass, usually. So sometimes switching brands might help to one that you know is just meat, and then adding your own bits and pieces to it.
Yeah.
So there's that. You can add another meal. And sometimes supper is a good one for getting weight on.
Yeah.
And we do this with humans as well. So for people that don't know, when I'm not doing canine nutrition, I'm a nurse. And one of the things we do for human people with who are undernourished or underweight is we stick a late supper on, because, you know, eating at rest, hopefully you will turn those calories into fat because they're not being used because you're asleep. So sometimes a bedtime snack isn't a bad idea. So you could do that with, I like things that you can make in a batch and have in the freezer, and then you're not faffing on. So I would make something like a cheesy muffin.
Oh.
So get a load of eggs. So get a full carton of eggs, crack them into a bowl, mix them with a full carton of cottage cheese, add in a full packet of ground almonds, whiz them up, or you could use grated cheese. It doesn't really matter. You could use a tin of sardines, anything like that. Mix them up, pour them into muffin cases, pop them in the oven for 15, 20 minutes on about 180, and then you've basically got these little high-calorie cakes.
Amazing.
One or two of those into your dog right before bed. It's really good for... I like dogs to have a bedtime routine, because it's, you know, you can use food as your off switch then.
Yeah.
So I'll give them one or two of those, and then it's last wheeze and toilets before bed, and then bedtime, and then you've got a whole routine then that's associated with calmness. You could chuck some chamomile into that mix as well, so it slows down the central nervous system a little bit. If you're going to put chamomile into that, let's say that you've used 12 eggs, 150 grams of cottage cheese or mature cheddar, and then 200 grams of ground almonds, then to that you would add 25 grams of chamomile. And I just use the Dodson and Horrell for Horses one of those.
Yes.
Excuse me, tickling.
Amazing. And with that, I mean, a lot of the advice I've been following is what you've just said there from your group for my spaniel, because as you said, it's entire meals, they just do silly things and they don't stop.
They don't stop moving.
No, definitely not.
They don't stop moving at all. One of mine's got into the habit now of it's not enough to just wag his tail and his whole body for you to just so that it's absolutely clear that he's happy. There's no mistaking the fact that he's happy, because everything is moving and wiggling and he's smiling at the same time and trying to get your eye contact. Aww. Now he has to do it in a doorway so that his tail can bang off both sides of the door, not just one object.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's a boy.
Love them.
Listen. Super. So question six. Yeah. How do you work out carbs versus protein versus veg to create the best balanced diet when raw feeding? I feel like this is a very... complex question, so
no, don't worry. So it depends on the dog.
Yeah.
And I tell you what I'm pleased about. I am pleased that Susan Garrett did a thing about feeding her dog where she purported the benefits of feeding more veg. Now let me tell you something, and I'm not doing it, oh, I said it first, there's none of that bollocks. But the when I very, very first developed feeding canine athletes, actually the first diet that I developed sort of with all the science was a 50-50, so it was half meat, half veg, but within the veg included good carbs like sweet potatoes or bulgur wheat or quinoa or pearl barley.
Yeah.
Things like that. So it would be like a slow cooked veggie blend with loads and loads of everything in it. This is where my feed the rainbow thing came from. Yes. And then the rest of it would be meat. And then at the same time as I was developing all this, there was this tidal wave of like a raw feeding revolution. And all the carbs got demonized, and then this uber myth of veg should only be 5% or something stupid, that got spread around. And I was like, ah, this is never going to take off the ground. No one's going to listen to me when I come in with my 50% wonder fruit and all this feed the rainbow nonsense. I'm going to do myself out of a job. It's too much for people to take on. And then, you know, 10 years later, Susan Garrett's been like, actually, this much meat just really upset my dog.
Yeah.
So luckily, she's done it for me. So everyone go and have a look at the podcast that Susan Garrett did about reducing the amount of meat that her dog got and increasing the amount of fruit and veg. Now, the reason why this works is because your fruit and veg are the things that contain all of your antioxidants. Mm. The digestion of meat from a dog is absolutely fine. They're not going to get the same level of oxidative stress that we get, but we are asking them to do a lot of work. So there's oxidative stress. So you need your vegetables to deal with all of that, to clear the free radicals, to, you know, they're like a sponge, that a nutritional sponge that kind of right all the wrongs almost.
Yeah.
You know, they provide fiber, they feed the microbiome. Dogs and humans that eat a purely carnivorous diet have been shown to generate their own short-chain fatty acids, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But it all works better if you provide them through plant matter.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you tell if you're getting it right with your dog? They should be energetic. You know, a dog can go all day and should be able to go all day. Obviously, the competition environment and the training environment, there may be other things that will suppress your dog's willingness to perform in terms of the psychology. You know, I've seen dogs that might shut down, that don't like the pressure, all the rest of it. I'm not talking about that. A dog that is completely mentally well, completely mentally robust, loves their job, not in an obsessive way, as in you can guarantee that they can do their job that you're asking them to do without any daftness or...
Yeah.
They should be visibly full of vitality. They shouldn't have a dull, staring coat. You should be able to see the balance of their muscles, the tuck of their waist, the top line cover of muscle. That's the big thing for me.
Yeah.
A dog that doesn't have a good top line for me isn't being fed correctly. A dog that's fed correctly has a really good top line, and that's all the muscles that basically hold them up and do the work that make their physique look athletic. The top line does that. And usually... it depends somewhat on breed and mentality.
Yeah.
But I would say that I would be feeding... Oh, and this is the other thing that people get confused with as well. When I'm talking about protein, I mean the percentage of actual protein in the diet, not the percentage of meat.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can have a diet that is 100% meat, but it might only total maybe 20% protein.
Mm-hmm.
So with that as an example, I tend to go for around 18 to 22% protein.
Yeah.
When I'm calculating it all. And then everything else that isn't meat, it's just an extra. It's just a filler. I don't take into account the carbs from that, the calories from that. I don't take them into account. They're literally there in the bowl for their healthful benefits, not for their calorific benefits, because most dogs are going to work through that anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe it would be better if people can visualize it, because people like how 80-10-10 works with raw feeding, don't they? Because they can picture in their head what it looks like. So let's say do an 80-10-10. If you're a raw feeder, do an 80-10-10.
Yeah.
Let's say your dog has 500 grams of an 80-10-10 if you've got like a 25 kilogram dog.
Mm-hmm.
500 grams of that. Then on top of that, I'd be putting another 100 grams of mixed veg on. And yep. When I say feed the rainbow, that serves a purpose. So I do a green veg, a red veg, an orange veg, as much colour variety as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to get in there. If it's a root veg, it needs cooking. If it's a green, sort of leafy green, just blanching quickly will do. You want to preserve the minerals.
Yeah.
So if a dog's getting all that and they're maintaining their weight, don't worry too much about carbs. As long as there's a little bit of carb in there,
mm-hmm.
Then that's fine. I would say no more than sort of 10% of the overall diet being carbs.
Amazing. Yeah.
And then the fat element, I'd leave that adjustable. So on days where you want more energy from them, where they're going to be busier, you give them more fat. On days where they're not doing anything, you leave the fat out. And that's where I use the olive oil because it's easy to measure. So again, easy to do a percentage on that. So if you've got a dog that their total meat is like 500 grams, mm-hmm. And I know that they are going to have a really, really busy day, I want to up the fat 10%. So I'm going to get 50 mils of olive oil into them throughout the day. So I might put 25 mils, mix it with an egg and a little bit of yogurt, something for breakfast, and then put the rest on tea, something like that.
I really like I say, the beauty of olive oil is that you can just use as much as you need. Like you said before, you can use it like a gravy almost, because...
Yeah, exactly. For busy dogs, though, for dogs that we know can tolerate fat. I mean, I'm sure there are people listening that have, like, cockapoos that can't tolerate fat, or they get pancreatitis and die. Obviously, don't do that for your dog.
Yeah.
Why a dog that you know, has suffered with pancreatitis that needs fueling as an athlete would be competing... Anyway, I'm not entirely sure, but if that did occur, then that dog would probably need fueling with carbs.
Super. So with that, we'll go into the next one, mm-hmm. Which I think is another subject that you really enjoy talking about. What staples do you recommend people feed to boost energy in their agility dogs over long show weekends?
Yeah. So it's the CSJ that's the longest one in this country, isn't it?
I think so. It's one of the longest ones, and KCI is quite a long one as well.
KCI's a long one. I know with CSJ, that's the one where I always get messages sort of 2 days in going, my dog's given up. I don't want to do it anymore. Tired. I'm tired. Usually it's the people that are tired and they feel fed up and they just want some reassurance and a virtual hug. I'm like, don't worry, we can fix this. Also, you're all mental. You're doing this whilst and getting no sleep and drinking too much alcohol. But we'll put that to one side and we'll sort your dog. So again, you pick your fuel. Some dogs that if you feed them more, they'll just poo more and won't have more energy, and that's not what you want. There are some dogs who you can try and increase their fat, and again they'll just poo more and won't necessarily do it. Some of it is the kind of the mental strength that's needed. Some dogs, it takes them time to get that, so it's not always that running out of energy isn't always a physical issue.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's more of a mental issue. And the reason why I say that is because you've got to be realistic. And the science of it is, if you feed a dog well and then stop feeding it and do not feed it again, but continue to do sort of normal, let's say 2 hours of exercise a day, even at that, and they've studied that this isn't, I know it's cruel, but they've studied this in beagles, in lab dogs. With no food at all, continuing to do 2 hours of exercise a day, a dog is still going to be able to replenish the glycogen in their muscles from their stored glycogen in their liver. Oh. They're still going to be able to do that consistently for 2 days of no food.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
Yeah. So realistically, your dogs that are well fed shouldn't be running out of physically bioavailable energy.
Yeah.
Sometimes what they're not very good at, or that takes their body a bit more time to, it's mainly for their brain to realize, oh, we do have energy. It's kind of a biological process. So one of the ways you can do that is you can give the dog foods that are really quickly bioavailable. and really quickly digested. So you can do that maybe, you know, half an hour before a run. You can give them like a whisked egg yolk, just a whisked egg yolk. That's it. And they can lap that. It's got all the amino acids. It's got fats. It's got proteins. And they can go, go, go. You can do a similar thing with glucose-based products, mm-hmm. things that have maltodextrin in them, stuff like that. They're fairly well studied. Personally, I just don't like them. I prefer mm-hmm. to fuel a dog with fats and proteins than I do with really, really simple carbohydrates like maltodextrin. I just don't like them. I don't think they're particularly helpful for kidney health.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really strive to do with performance dogs is to protect their kidneys, mm-hmm. because their kidneys get an absolute hammering from what we ask them to do, not least because of the amount of adrenaline that we elicit from them. You know, we want them to play the game. We want them to enjoy it. We want them to give their all. And to do that, they need a lot of adrenaline. Adrenaline is metabolized through sodium. And when you have something that's metabolized through sodium, that sodium has to be excreted through the kidneys, and it's hard for the kidneys to do. So my big thing is to protect the kidneys with the sporting dogs. So that means that if we're using protein for energy, it's got to be high quality, easily digestible protein that's low on byproducts. So eggs are really good for that. Sardines are really good for that. Fats aren't going to particularly affect the kidneys too much, especially if you're using medium chain triglycerides. The other thing about medium chain triglycerides is they can cross the blood-brain barrier, so the brain's being fueled as well.
Oh, interesting.
So we need that. So, and then earlier we talked about hydration. Actually, you can whack all of these good things into, if your dog's well hydrated, they're going to run better. If you're going to add a little bit of sweetness in there, a little bit of simple carbohydrate, use a little bit of honey.
There's no end to what honey can do.
You love a bit of honey. So it's a little bit like you might see these products called pre-workout for humans.
Yeah.
You can totally do that for dogs. You can even use some of the same sort of products if you wanted to. I think they're a bit of a gimmick, and again, hard on kidneys. So, you know, you can use whey isolates and all this bollocks. I don't. I just like to use food. So you can get, again, 1 liter water bottle, half water, half goat's milk, stick a couple of egg yolks in there, stick a tablespoon of honey in there, give it a good shake, see if your dog will drink it. If they won't, just keep putting things in that they like.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you're getting there is basically a soup or a shake that's going to provide everything that your dog needs in a healthy form that's easily digested. The hydration is the biggest thing. You know, they get really thirsty over these long days.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
They're not sleeping as well as they could be because, you know, it's quite noisy. There's a lot going on. They're full of adrenaline. It takes 2 days to come down off of adrenaline. So they're not getting that to do because they have to perform the next day and the next day. So you get a buildup of adrenaline too. And that's another reason why the hydration is really important, to flush all that out. You know, it's asking a lot. So we need to replace as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a really supportive environment for recovery, for sleep. And we know how much I love the herbs. I just really like herbs. The functional herbs are just brilliant, and they do what you want them to do. So the other thing that you can do is ensure they get a really good sleep. And again, a little bit of chamomile, or chucking the contents of a pucker tea bag.
Oh, they're amazing.
They're amazing. We love a pucker tea bag.
You don't have to do anything with it. You just tear it open. Yep.
Not at all. And I know we use the Placid as a substitute, but the Placid is quite coarse. It comes in big bags, and it's just a bit of, and if your dog doesn't need it all the time, you know, it's going to take you years to get through that. So the pucker tea bags for nighttime recovery whilst you're away, not all the time. If your dog's not like a stressor, all it is to just get them to have a really good sleep, because there's nothing better than that for recovery, especially over a few days. So it's a multi kind of faceted approach, not just about the nutrition. It's about having good sleep. It's about really good hydration, the quality of the protein that you give. You know I always say the same things over and over again, but exosardines are good and you can take them with you. You don't need a fridge, and you can use them to bait water. You can just add them to food. They're a good thing.
And I'm right in thinking as well, because I saw the Top Life milk you can get from any shop, really.
The Top Life milk.
And it doesn't need to be in the fridge. Once you've opened it, but to be fair, with multiple dogs, you probably use a little carton in one.
And your bone broth as well.
Super easy. Because that's actually one of the next questions, which we can go on to. It's leading on. I'm camping for week-long shows. Is there anything you'd recommend raw feeders to give their dogs when they might not have a fridge or suppliers nearby?
If most of your fridge, if you've got some fridge space, or storage for your raw stuff. Mm. So firstly, you can still take your raw. You can. I have done it before, and I didn't even have a fancy cool box. I just had the polystyrene boxes that the raw is delivered in. Honestly, that keeps your stuff cold for, like, cold enough, definitely, for 3 days, for sure.
Oh,
the trick is that you just have to really fill it up right to the top. Yeah. The more air you've got in there, the quicker it's going to defrost, basically. So you want it kind of really solidly packed, and it'll stay frozen. So that takes care of your meat. Things like vegetables, stuff like that. The baby food pouches are absolutely brilliant. You can get baby food pouches that are stable at room temperature. If you want to add, like, veg, if you want to give them a kind of yogurty blueberry breakfast, they've got those ones. All shelf stable, absolutely brilliant. Other things that you can use, tinned stuff. You can get tinned carrots and all sorts of tinned vegetables. So they all stay. They all stay good at room temp. But don't stress it. You don't have to overthink it too much. All the things that give your dog a good boost, that I advise, are usually shelf stable because of that. Because you need to have them while you're at shows, and they need to not be needing a fridge and stuff. I mean, because some people just stay in tents, don't they?
Yeah.
It's proper off-grid stuff. So if you can still take your meat, that's one way to do it. And as I say, loads of shelf-stable options for veg, and even for things like those little yogurty pouches are absolutely brilliant
for
breakfast.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, you don't have to be totally anal about all the things that need to be in the fridge. Your meat obviously does. Like, bananas don't need to be in a fridge. You can give your dog a banana. That's going to give them a nice boost, particularly sort of mashed with one of those yogurty pouches. All of that sort of thing. There's not. What else do people take away with them if they're raw feeding? Probably just the meat. I mean, if you wanted to, if it's really expensive, but there's obviously the freeze dried meat.
Yes, I was going to say. I was going to ask if you had seen that.
Yeah, so freeze dried meat like Zooey Peak and stuff like that. What's the other one? Rocketto, I think, maybe. Yeah. Absolutely has your eyes out price wise. I mean, goodness, but absolutely fine. Rehydrate it though. Give it a good soak. For an alternative, as long as your dog's all right with beef, on Zoo Plus, there's Rocco tins.
Yes, I remember you mentioning this when
they're
I did.
They're quite good. That. They're a really good price, but they're all beef based. There's not but beef in there, but they're a really good price, and it tends to swap over with raw quite well. They're a little bit more offal heavy, I would say. You might get slightly darker, squishier poops, but nothing too major. To swap your meat out if you wanted to. Things like Fourth Glade, they're quite good.
Yeah. I've used those a few times. They're very, very easy to get.
Aren't they? Yeah. Really easy. So there's, the kind of higher quality, shelf stable, wet foods, they're all fine too. You could pimp them out again, eggs, sardines, olive oil. All that kind of stuff. You can pimp them up and make them a bit more energy dense if you need to.
Oh, that's amazing. And like I say, I think that question, it was very helpful because we're going into the summer now. And obviously we're getting hot summers. Those people in tents, bless them, to keeping their food cold for longer is going to get a bit more difficult. So that's perfect. So one last question, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So to finish off on, is there anything you'd suggest feeding to help dogs who become over-aroused easily?
Yeah, so this is all of the calming supplements. And again, you have to figure out what works well for your dog. I always start with chamomile. I know this is like the eighth time I've mentioned it on this podcast, but that is where you start. Yes. You start with chamomile and you start at half a teaspoon per 5 kilograms once a day. And you do that in the morning. You can increase that to twice a day. You can further increase that to double that amount as and when you need it. So let's say you've got a 10 kilogram dog, you've had 2 weeks of giving them half a teaspoon morning and night, you've got your first competition coming up. On that morning, you give them a full heap teaspoon.
Yeah.
You want to give them a little bit more chill. You know, they're used to it, you know, they're fine with it. You want to give them a little bit more chill, which is fine. If that isn't doing the trick, you can add in something that calms down the central nervous system. Personally, I like to use lemon balm. Mm-hmm. All the herbs I use are traditional. They've been around forever. They're very well studied. They've been safe for a long time. They're in a lot of proprietary herbal supplements for dogs and have been for years. So these are all the ones that I use. There are other ones that I use in consultation that need a little bit more of a keeping an eye on. But I'll leave those because people always want to get adventurous and it's not always necessary.
Yeah.
So the lemon balm, also called Melissa officinalis, it helps calm the central nervous system. A lot of this is kind of, you know, like wishy-washy hippie stuff, but there are some really good studies for it. Not particularly, you know, what dog studies, they're just, they barely exist. So I tend to use the human studies for this. So, chamomile, that works on GABA, which if you want to have a Google of that and what that means for calming the GABA receptors and how that links to calming. The other thing chamomile does is it helps relax smooth muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things about relaxing smooth muscle in this way is if you can't physically make yourself tense, then you're going to feel less tense.
I see.
One of my friends has Botox in her forehead and she described this feeling really well. And since she had Botox in her forehead, she's less of an angry person because she physically can't frown. She sees something that annoys her and her next reaction is to frown. And because she can't frown, she can't escalate the annoyance. She can't get more angry because she can't do anything about it. So she's just like, oh, sod it, never mind, I'll just move on with my life. And that's what chamomile can be a little bit like.
Yeah.
It helps the relaxation bodily with those smooth muscles. So it helps an anxious dog give less of a shit.
Interesting.
Lemon balm does the same. When you've got all those synapses firing from anxiety in the brain throughout your body, it has that bodily effect of, you know, your palms might sweat or your heart might race and you might want to move more and be restless that way. That's what lemon balm is quite good for.
Yeah.
It's also a nice one to use for dogs that are maybe in that sort of adolescent phase where they're not really listening. It's not so much that they're anxious, it's just that there's so much going on and they want to have an emotional response to everything and you would like them to just listen and learn. And lemon balm is good for that too. So for dogs that are anxious, maybe just, you know, it's not severe. They're just a little bit distracted and a little bit fretty and looking about and hypervigilant, lemon balm, as well as chamomile for that one. You can use them together quite nicely. What else do I quite like? I quite like vervain. And again, you use these all in the same amounts. So vervain is a nice one for dogs that need bringing down a little bit more. So this will be my third one to add. So I'm adding all these together. Start with chamomile. If more needs to be done, add the lemon balm. If your dog's still a dick, add the vervain. sorry, if your dog needs more help, if they've got big feelings, I'm not being mean to dogs. I like them. so you can add the vervain, and that's really helpful. If you want something that does all of these, if you don't want to be faffing with individual herbs, and you kind of want something that's going to have all of those in it, you can try Placid. It is for horses. It's just a horsey version of the CSJ herb, which is, I think it's called Calm Down.
Yeah.
Calm Down's got a little bit of skullcap in it, which is fine. One of the things that I will say, that there's valerian and skullcap tablets, NutriCalm, things like that. They're all really, really popular for anxious dogs. I don't like to use them for my canine athletes because they are sedative. They are sedated. And sometimes when you are sedated and you're also being asked to perform, it can bring in an extra level of fear because you feel in your body that it's having an effect. It's not particularly subtle. It can make you feel sleepy. And then when you're being asked to perform on top of that, it can bring in more anxiety. If it's a dog that's fearful, I don't use them at all in dogs that have fear, because it's going to create a more overt fear response. You give anything, even slightly sedative, to a dog that is fearful, they're going to feel less able to defend themselves. It's going to make them feel more frightened, and any reaction that they do have is going to be bigger, harder, stronger, because they're going to feel more vulnerable. So I avoid them. It's not to say that they don't work. They absolutely do. And there are times that I do use them, things like dogs that might get stressed before an event just because of the travel, travel anxiety, travel sickness, things like that. But for the other ones, I start with the chamomile, then add lemon balm, then add vervain, or use something like CSJ Calm Down or Placid, Dodson and Horrell Placid. And you can give those once or twice a day. And the other thing about those herbs is for one-offs, for a here and there, whatever the dose is, you can double it for that day. And that's very helpful too, because the overdose limits on them are really quite high. And you would have to give lots and lots and lots every single day for weeks and weeks and weeks if you were going to, you know, try and harm your dog through using calming herbs. That would be the way to do it. We're not going to do that. So you can double up. I mean, with chamomile, you can triple up if you need to on the day to get the desired effect. But always consider that herbs are just there to give you a window of opportunity to make your training more effective. You just need a moment of calm to instill a new instruction or cue or behavior that you can practice and that you can use to change behavior. Behavior modification isn't just about herbs. It's about the other things that you do while the herbs are giving you the opportunity to make that training stick.
Amazing. And I think that's a really good point as well, because as you say, the herbs get you, you know, so far, but actually there's other aspects of it. Like you say, with having that window of opportunity there, you can really build on where the dog already is. I think that's a really good point.
Well, they made a meme of me, didn't they, on the group?
Oh, did they? I don't know if I've seen it.
Oh, they stuck my face on, you know, the salt bay, the man that sprinkles the salt in the food. Do you know the man?
The man.
They stuck my face, and he was all on all the memes, wasn't he? So they stuck, it was Pinella and it was Pauline, and they did it together, and I've been bullied. They stuck my face on that, and it was my smug face that they'd found somewhere on Instagram. I pulled a smug face. I didn't mean to, but I did. Pulled a really smug face, made my chin look massive. So they paused it, and they took my picture off of that, and they put it onto the salt bay man who sprinkles the salt, and made a meme saying a sprinkle won't fix it.
I love that. I'm gonna have to find that. No, I'm kidding.
it's somewhere in the group, and it's because, and obviously I you know, there's having a reactive dog is awful. Having a dog with behavioral problems is awful, and I absolutely understand that people get to a point where, you know, they're desperate to try anything. They just want a normal life, a normal dog. They're usually overwhelmed. They're usually overtired. They're usually fed up. They're usually grieving the loss of a dream that they had for a dog that would take them places and do things and all of that. And And then they come to me and tell me all of this, and can I offer a supplement? And I always feel terrible because I'm like, obviously not. There's not a sprinkle to fit. Look at what you've just told me is happening, like major impacts in your life, major things going on, you know, with this dog, and no, a sprinkle's not going to fix it. And I always feel like I've got to find a better way of communicating this because I always sound like a bitch.
No, I think it's a really good point. Like I say, diet gets them obviously so far, but there's lots of other components that goes into it. You know, if I every day, but I was coming home and eating pizza and chocolate, which I'm not gonna lie, I do. I'm not gonna see a huge difference in my. And like I said, that it's the same thing. You know, with the dogs, we can do everything. You know, they can have a great diet.
Have come to rely on me for being honest, and I really appreciate that, and I appreciate it's a big responsibility to be honest, but sometimes I do kind of struggle with my own kind of like, well, what made you think I could help with all of this, like, and
it'd be a millionaire if you did have the
yeah. And I'm not going to be, you know, there are, it's not anyone's fault, because so many people all of the time when it comes to behavior are, I really feel for people because they're either sold a lie or they're sold it misinformation or they're promised such high, you know, such big promises. And usually the bigger the promise, the more money it costs as well. And I'm not going to take people on a ride like that. And I really dislike the people that do, you know, the adverts that you see. My dog was barking from morning till night. I couldn't leave them. I had to quit my job and work from home. But one scoop of this and it was all better. And I just think, oh, well, just no, it wasn't. Or no, I did two of these treats twice a day for a month and then Bobby was better. And I just think, no, he isn't. Because eventually whatever that treat's doing is probably going to wear off, or something else happened alongside these treats that you're not telling us about, you're just lying.
The placebo effect.
It is. And it's, you know, I think more than anything, the sprinkles and things can help, but for, you know, for proper behavioral stuff, what you need is a multi-level approach from everything, from the environment, from genetics. Firstly, you need to really, really understand your dog. Are you trying to change something that isn't going to be changed because that dog has been bred to do that?
Yes,
you need to adjust your expectations. And that's really hard because there's not, I've seen more of these kind of, particularly for collies and spaniels, more of these kind of gun dog people treating the, you know, the pet dogs and their behavior stuff, and, you know, collie specialists treating their stuff. And, you know, a lot of them, they're just, it's just another gimmick. I really feel for people that have behavioural issues. It's tough.
And like I say, you probably get a lot of people coming to you for, you know, for the diet aspect and wanting to improve that to see, you know, as a desperation. And like I say,
we can do all the good stuff. We can put everything nutritionally ever in place to give your dog the best chance of having improved behaviour, but it rarely works in isolation.
Lots of food for thought there, pardon the pun.
Little rant from me at the end about behaviour. It's not even what I do, but
no, but you've got so mention. Much. It's very good to mention, definitely. Amazing. Well, do you know what, my brain is buzzing now with ideas and things. I feel like I need to go cook and I need to go do a shop. Well, thank you ever so much for all that advice. I mean, you're just an encyclopedia for everything dog diet, and I can't thank you enough for your wisdom. To finish off, could you let people know how to get in touch with you or where they can find out how to come to you for consultations? Because I know you do sometimes do those. And promote anything you want.
Oh, thanks. So it's literally just my Facebook group. It's paused at the minute. I'm having a little break. You can still find it. You can still go on there and look if you're already a member. But It's off at the minute, but you're going to tell me when you're posting this podcast, aren't you? So I can turn it on in time. Yeah. Okay. So my Facebook group, it's called Holly Barker's Sport Dog Nutrition. That is how you get hold of me. If you have a question, you can post in there. When I'm consulting, which I'm not at the moment, but when I am, I'll post dates on there. I am concentrating consultations now purely on the canine athletes. Did a lot of pet stuff for a long time, but I'm really focusing on that now. So that's why I'm not just putting any consultation spaces anywhere for mm-hmm. anyone to book. I'm literally just concentrating on the athletes at the moment. So I'll post about that when I have consultation time available. I post that on the group. Just the group really. And if you want my Amtenol codes again, they are for your first order, Holly sent me. And for any subsequent orders, it's Holly's gang. And that's it.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, that has been amazing. I cannot thank you enough. I'll speak to you later. Cheers.
Bye, darling. Bye. Bye.